For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with Reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restore the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Well, we have a very special show tonight, and so we will not be taking callers again. I apologize. It's been in a while since we've actually been available for you, but we're going to have Tim Benn in to talk about the Constitution. He is a candidate running for city council in District 3, and I believe it's position 2, and his opponent, Kate Burke, who's chose not to come on because we wanted to make sure she had the same amount of time or for both of them to come in and basically kind of have the dialogue back and forth regarding the importance of the Constitution and how it affects their decisions as a city council person, because the city council actually sees federal funding, unconstitutional funding coming in, and they need to be aware of this. So we'll get into this conversation a little bit later, but this show will be rebroadcasted, and I believe it will be at 11 on Saturday, right before the Whitworth game, and go Pirates. They're doing pretty good. And so let's just keep the trend going. And that being said, many parts of these shows, as I always say, are references and, kind of dovetail with each other. And if you really want to understand, you know, when I use the terms Republic Review and so forth, you need to download the podcast so you can understand how everything kind of dovetails and meshes in how we're going to reclaim the Republic. So you can do that at ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, and it'll be on the podcast page. I also have a podcast archive, but those are much older podcasts that go all the way back to the Constitution Radio back in 2014 and so forth. Ed Pace, the councilman for Spokane Valley, will be hosting the following town hall events. And it'll be Wednesday at McDonald's on University and Sprague, and that's at 9 a.m. And Friday at 9 a.m. at Forza Coffee on Sullivan and 4th. And Saturday, 8 a.m. at Rosar's on University and Sprague. The Republican Coffee Club this week will be a roundtable forum, and they will be discussing the military-industrial complex. Are we spending too much, or are we too naive towards this? And I honestly think that the military-industrial complex is kind of being impaled, or not impaled, but it's pale in comparison to the social spending, such as Social Security and all the social programs. And so I think that, you know, too many people are focused on the military side of our budget when that's just a small fraction now compared to the social spending. That being said, before I get into talking about the guests coming up, I kind of have a post, and I've articulated my feelings regarding what's really going on with the professional sports and so forth. And I know that there is, you know, there needs to be a comment regarding what happened in Las Vegas, but I'm really just biting my tongue, waiting for some evidence and so forth to come forth. So I will probably say something in regards to what's going on in the investigation and all the facts as they start to really get exposed, because there's just a lot of fake news in that tragedy. And so I prefer to wait until we're actually in a position of maybe not empirical data and facts, but somewhere where we're a little bit closer to the truth. Anyway, regarding the NFL, when a person speaks up to articulate a different idea, then one can reasonably presume that this is one who is exercising their free speech. but when one is only regurgitating unfounded and failed dogma that has been the narrative and party line for secular progressives and their communist comrades for decades, then this is not free speech. It is the preaching of one's religious ideology, secular progressivism. To be clear, this is still a First Amendment right, but it is not the freedom of religion and religious expression and not freedom of speech. The secular progressive ideology contains and teaches doctrine that is not only the antithesis to our Christian heritage and ideology, it is also hostile to Christianity and is in the position of being a combative opposition to our founding principles of individual liberty and individual sovereignty. If one considers this perspective of religion in contrast to speech, one will fathom that the secular progressive religion has millions of missionaries proselytizing their false religion in our education system, the mainstream media, the entertainment industry, and now the professional sports leagues. More important, when this secular progressive dogma and preaching becomes a chorus line performed by a group or even a corporation or institution, such as the professional sports teams, which harmonizes with the message of education, Hollywood, and the mainstream media, then we are witnessing what previous societies have experienced prior to their collapse. To be clear, one must recognize that this chorus line is a part of the secular progressive big sermon of manipulation and is nothing more than religious expression and not free speech. To place this into context, when one witnesses an entire collective of organizations like a league that we see being centrally led by Roger Goodell, who is not enforcing the historically established policies of behavior and instead encouraging and enabling contrary behavior to these policies with the rendering of disrespect to the national anthem and ensign, then this clearly has nothing to do with speech at all, and they are articulating as a collective that they, as a league, are wholly bought into the secular progressive ideology. As such, Goodell and his entire organization are acting as one of the many monkeys on a set of strings dancing for the progressive organ grinder along with the other secular progressive agents or monkeys, in other words, the education system, the mainstream media, the entertainment industry, along with communist and democratic parties, to try to bring forth fundamental change to destroy our life and our individual liberty and sovereignty. This begs the question, who is calling the tune? It is obvious that these leagues do not possess the cognitive power to truly lead, which is why they are following this failed ideology. Therefore, is this secular progressive dogma coming from local or globalist leaders? Either way, the intent is to undermine our Constitution and our individual liberty. While one can presume that the customer is always in charge, my friends, I believe we are witnessing that these leagues have abandoned the free market for their religious dogma, and what was once a great American institution is just another flunky for the national or global secular church. It is time to use those same free market principles that they have abandoned with a similar response by us customers abandoning the professional sports, entertainment industry, the mainstream media, and the national education. When these institutions fail, they will fail, and we need to let them fail and go into bankruptcy. No more unconstitutional taxpayer-funded bailouts, regardless of the type of institution. Let them fail. And if I'm wrong on this, please email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. That being said, as soon as we come back from this break, we're going to be heading into in probably just another minute, we'll have Tim Benn here. And again, he's a great guy. I highly endorse him. And we need to get your turnout in getting your ballots if you live in District 3 in voting for Position 2. If it's in your ballot, vote for Tim Benn, because he is the guy that is at least willing to come in and talk about the Constitution. And he understands the importance of this, folks. He understands why we're being manipulated by bureaucrats, and we'll get into these conversations. But I want you to listen to the dialogue, and I hope you will recognize that you need to have this type of leadership in the city council and not the type of leadership that are singing the chorus line of the secular progressives who are dancing a tune because, you know, the old adage, he who pays the piper calls the tune. And these people are beholden to big money and globalist interest. And with that, as we hear the music, we're going into a hard break. So when we come back, we'll actually have Tim Benn here, and we'll be talking about Republic Review and making Spokane great again. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, so we are back, and as promised, I have our city council candidate, Tim Benn, for which district is it to?
It is District 1, Position 2.
Okay, District 1, Position 2, and we actually asked your opponent, Kate...
Burke. Yes.
And she declined in coming on to discussing the Constitution, Republic Review, and the importance of understanding the Constitution as a city council member. And you've read Republic Review.
I've read the executive summary of Republic Review. Okay. Yes. To be clear.
There's a lot of details to it, and I know it's like a fire hose of information.
Well, it's like many documents that our city government puts out that nobody actually gets to read the whole thing. We just spend the money to produce hundreds and hundreds of pages, and everybody else just kind of wants the summary because, there's only so much time in a day.
Right. Well, I appreciate you taking the time in your day to reading that. And the fact that the states, I'm not sure if you've ever heard the concept or if you ever even fathomed the idea and concept of the Constitution being a contract, and that the states actually have the authority to step in and say, hey, you're not following this contract. You need to get back and get into line with what you're supposed to be doing and stop doing all these things, putting us into debt and basically sending us towards bankruptcy. And if the states don't do that, we're in real big trouble. But what do you think of that?
Well, I see a whole lot of things going on where we have taxation without representation. And the way our city council is supposed to work as far as representative government is that we're supposed to, we're having two representatives per district. And we have six city council people and a council president that's elected citywide. And most of the spending decisions should be made at that level, where, like the federal government and state governments, many authorities have been handed over to unelected bodies or bureaucrats. And so then those elected officials don't have to, they feel like they've put that obligation somewhere else and they don't have to be held responsible for it anymore. The only problem is that it is constitutionally their responsibility, and the people deserve to be represented in the decisions that are made with the resources that they give government. The citizenry should always be reviewing the contract because, in essence, the public has a contract with the government, which is why we allow ourselves to be taxed.
Right. And at the local level, our government contract is actually with the state of Olympia. Or I should not the state of Olympia. In Olympia.
That's what it seems
state.
Like. The state of Olympia sure does.
Maybe that was a Freudian slip somehow.
Yeah, Eastern Washington doesn't feel represented.
But the point is that if people were familiar with this contract that we have created a long, long time ago, and as a matter of fact, it was established November 11th, and I believe it was 1889, when Washington became a state, when that Constitution was ratified. And then I even hear that there's a problem with the Constitution. Which one do we go by?
Well, it depends on what problem you're talking about. I mean, right now, the far left says there's a problem with the Constitution because it doesn't allow an income tax. So which problem are we referring to, right? And who's the position,
Correct. But the state was granted in the federation or in the federal schema, the states were granted all privileges that weren't delegated to the federal government. In other words, transportation, roadways, highways, railroads, and all those types of things, agriculture, labor, everything that is had not been enumerated in the Constitution is been left to the state. So if there's money to be coming into the city, it should be coming in from Olympia through the general tax fund that the state of Washington has been able to capture.
Unless there is no room in the Constitution for the state to do a certain activity, and then it's left up to the locality to take on
Correct.
Those activities.
Correct.
Like local policing and whatnot. So, you know, I think the problem is, and I always tell people, you know, there's a lot of things that government does that needs to be done. But the problem that we have, in my personal opinion, is that the government's trying to do too many things that it's not good at. And I look at government as the worst way to launder money. Yeah. So, you know, there's no reason to take money out of the locality, give it to the federal government, hire teams and teams of bureaucrats to figure out who to hand it down to, because
right.
now you've lost a lot of the value of that taxation that we, as the public, are in contract with the government, allowing it to tax us for certain services. If
right.
we lose 30% of the actual dollars for our local policing because we give it to the federal government to give it to the states, for the states to give it to the city, and we don't have public safety that we are paying for, well, then we got to quit laundering the money through the most inefficient system known to man, and that's government.
Right, right. And as a matter of fact, Adam Smith was pretty clear that government is a necessity. When you have a population or a society of so many people that requires some type of civil accord where you start creating laws and rules and regulations, then you have to form government.
Yep.
But government, as the framers looked at it, and as Madison said in Federalist Paper number 10, that government's sole and primary responsibility is to protect life and property.
Right.
And so taking property for them to do what they need to do, it has nothing to do with that sole responsibility and actually is the antithesis or is in contrast to what they're supposed to be doing. When,
right.
when they start playing this redistribution of wealth and have progressive taxation and then start figuring out other ways, then government has become so onerous and such a burden to the people that people start naturally coming up with ways of undermining these processes, gaming the system and so forth. And actually, Adam Smith posed the question, who do you blame, the criminal that is violating the laws of government, or do you blame the unreasonable, onerous duties of government when they place such a burden upon man that man can't even get ahead? He's just in this downward spiral of debt and so forth.
Well, you know, you just, in the Federalist Papers number 10, you said it was stated it was life and property,
right?
Okay, well, Washington State is the highest property crime state in the nation. Spokane County is the highest property crime county in the state. And it was announced, you know, we have all these state funds, millions and millions, billions and billions of dollars coming into the state. We have all the local taxing authorities. And of course, we spend money on lots of interesting things, lots of flower pots and sporting events and you know, really nice things. That's great. But the problem is we don't investigate property crime. And they announced that, you know, almost a decade ago. And we still don't investigate property crime. And so it's open season for the criminal because if it's not enforced, then it must not be the law. And that's part of the problem we keep creating. If you live in Spokane, you probably realize that there are panhandlers on almost every major corner. Now, most people have forgotten that panhandling is actually a violation of local ordinance. But because it's not enforced, is it the law? I mean, that's the thing, is if we have laws, just like the Constitution, just like the contract with the state and the federal government,
right.
if we don't enforce that contract, we don't enforce the law, does the law even exist?
So that's like what my wife usually says to me, well, if you go out in the middle of the woods and says something and nobody's there to hear it, you're still wrong.
Right. True. So, true. But there's no one there to challenge it.
That's right.
So what we've done is we've all taken a hike out to the woods. We've put ourselves in this eco bubble and no one is challenging what's wrong.
Right. Well, so in essence, if there is laws against panhandling, and as a matter of fact, I understand that Mayor Condon was passing a law, or the law had passed, that they would start fining people that gave money to the panhandlers and these people sitting at the corners of the streets begging and so forth. And so isn't that in effect where they actually charge people a lot more money? And have they not started really taking effort in going after the people? Because if you take away the source of money for these people, then they will. And then that's just one little microcosm of all the problems that we have, right?
Yeah.
But
they have put an initiative forward to try to get people to quit making panhandling profitable, because most of them actually aren't homeless. There are homeless programs.
Sure.
We have more feeding programs. And part of the reason why we're a destination to be homeless is because of how many resources we put into the needy and how compassionate and caring our citizenry here is. But we also have the lowest income zip code in the state that we're taxing to take care of these individuals. And so, you know, We see that they're, you know, the drug abuse and the other things that encourage the panhandlers, obviously, to go out and try to collect more money.
Right.
I think we've got to go deeper into the problem than just going after the people that give to panhandlers.
All right. Well, hey, we're up against a heartbreak, so stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you. Okay, so we're back, and we still have Tim Benn here, and we were just talking about how Spokane is the place of interest for those who want to be indolent and living off the dole. However, he made a comment that he says that we're a very compassionate city, and I'm not sure if it's really that we're a compassionate city when it's by compulsion. In other words, when they're using tax dollars where we don't have a choice to be compassionate, it's, you know, they're basically reaching and grabbing and taking from us to force this compassion. Then we can't call this compassion.
Well, actually, in Spokane, there's a mixture of compassion. There is the forced philanthropy through taxation, yes, but there is also a lot of other philanthropy. I think we are the nonprofit capital of the world. Per capita, the amount of nonprofits we have in Spokane, it's enormous. And, you know, so we have, there's private philanthropy, and then there's also public. But I think the issue, and I'm talking to lots of leaders, people that work in homeless programs, people that are working with the mentally ill, the drug addicted, and the problems that they're facing is that there isn't an obligation, there isn't responsibility that comes with these programs. And actually what we heard here at City Council just a few weeks ago from the homeless community is they don't like the nonprofits that provide services that have rules or religion or something else that goes with it. They just want the resources. And so with everything, there's rights, but with rights comes responsibility. And so we have to make sure that we're putting that into these programs, that, you know, if this government's going to be funding a program, there should be a responsibility that shouldn't just be a handout. And we always say it should be a hand up, but are we handing up or are we just handing out? Because if there's no obligation that comes with the free stuff, what do we have?
Right. And it's likened to a child being able to dictate how they want to be raised. In other words, putting the kids in charge and saying, well, we don't want to have rules. What we want is the resources. And literally, that's what we're doing, is enabling bad behavior by not allowing a criteria and expectations to be set and making sure that expectations are met.
Well, that's interesting. That sounds like a really horrible thing to do. That's not very nice. I mean, you have expectations of other people because you're providing them something. Actually, I had that conversation with my son as I walked out the house. I gave my daughter a couple directions of things that she could do today because they didn't have school today because it's Indigenous Peoples Day. I mean, Columbus Day. I don't know. Anyways, we'll have that argument later because our city council has decided to change names of things and holidays, which is not really part of their job.
Job, correct.
But anyway, I said, well, you're going to mow the yard. And I said, you've spent a lot of time with the sports and the school and the other things and haven't done much chores lately. And he says, well, I cleaned my room the other day. And he says, I did an oil change on my truck. And I says, well, those things are your problem now. You got to help the whole of the household because we all share this responsibility. And that's what we have to look at with government and involvement of shared responsibilities.
Sure.
In the community. And one of the things with the homeless issue There's a shared responsibility, and we need to make sure that when we deal with issues like that, that we have a consensus, and this is how we're going to handle it instead of piecemealing out all these services, because there's more free meals downtown that I could even eat in a day.
Correct.
So, you know, coordinating the services and making sure that the systems are not being abused is important.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely understand that. And I do understand, because I've had actually Aaron Tilbury in from the Jonah Project talking about the plight of the disenfranchised youth and enslaved sex trafficking and that type of stuff. And so it's just amazing the types of problems that this little town, big city has.
Right. Well, I mean, we create victims. And that's part of the problem we have now is that a lot of these systems are created that you have to stay in your victimhood. So if you have to stay in your victimhood, then where's the accountability? So did you lose your sound?
I did.
That's okay. Well, I've got my sound back.
Okay.
So
good.
I can hear as long as you can hear. Technical difficulties, you know. Let's
keep going.
But now we have legislative difficulties, and that's the problem, is we are legislating feelings instead of our contracts. Getting back to what you were talking about, contracts, when there are resources used, whether it's a contractor paving a road or a contractor, a police contract. We have a contract with the police union. Are those contracts being held accountable on both sides of the token? Is the taxpayers and the cities doing their job with police enforcement? Is in police enforcement holding up the contract? So I think that we have to look at all the things that we're doing, because of course we're making new laws all the time, and we just talked about it before, where we don't enforce panhandling, and the police say, well, that's because you don't give us enough resources. But on the other hand, what other directions have we given the police? A lot of people don't realize that a state-run youth program called the Excelsior program has the most amount of police calls to it of any other address in our city. I think it was over 3,000 calls in a 2-year period of time.
Wow.
So that's over 3 calls a day.
Right.
And that's because a state youth program is not run properly, and they cannot restrain children that are abusive to other children, so they just call the police. So now we have a state program overusing our local resources, and our local resources can't be used to help local citizens.
Right.
So these are contracts that we need to review and say, look, if you're going to be located in our city, you need to police yourself a little bit better, or you need to pay us for the policing services you're taking, because we're not serving our citizenry with our stated mission of protecting life and property.
Right, and they don't have time to visit vehicle accidents unless there's a personal injury or property and so forth. I mean,
we don't have time to deal with the heroin epidemic and the drug epidemic that's also creating some of that homeless problem.
Right. So the solution is apparently either lobotomies or forcing accountability and responsibility upon people.
I would lean towards the responsibility side.
Okay, good.
I know that we're looking at in politics, they're looking at forced health care like vaccines and other things. I'm kind of not for forced health procedures.
Sure,
I think that the individual liberties are should be involved in health care decisions.
But believe
so the
it
lobotomies
or not,
are
they
out of
they
out
actually
of the
used to do that though.
Well, and that's why it's important to know our history and the
sure.
mistakes that we've made.
Yes.
So moving forward, what we have to realize is that people need to be held responsible for their actions. And I think that we also government needs to be a facilitator
right.
of people using their rights with their responsibilities to succeed. And what we've done is government has become an avenue of creating your victimhood so that you don't have to have responsibility.
And the fact is that people are not learning that in their home. And so I understand that we have a real cultural problem. And it's not just unique to Spokane. It's not unique to Washington. It is a cultural problem within and rampant throughout the United States that children are not being brought up learning responsibilities, being accountable, honor, integrity, the types of things that, you know, I was brought up with and the things I learned from the Marine Corps.
Well, it's really interesting. My wife and I run a child care. And actually, in our child care, we have a constitution hanging on the wall, Bill of Rights. It's interesting. We don't teach a lot of those things like we should in the home. But I think that we're, you know, our systems have told parents, you know, you should not discipline your child. You know, it's a CPS call now if you take your child's cell phone, because so much social media, so much of their interaction is on their devices.
So they're entitled to that now.
And they're entitled to that now. And so if you take away the cell phone, then you are isolating the child. So there's no, you know, we take away the tools from parents and the idea of parenthood. You're going to correct your child and you're going to guide them in the way they should go. Now it's up to other systems, the education system, or whatever, the Boy Scouts, the Boys and Girls Clubs, that kind of thing. Those are shaping the morals of your child, not you, because you're a tyrant, you're a parent. Well, excuse me, when that child becomes 18, when they make a mistake and they don't follow the rules in the home, they need to be grounded or have some kind of action taken. In society, they turn 18, they don't follow the rules, they get thrown in an 8x8 cell. So, you know, I think that we've got to get them ready for the expectations of a lawful society.
Right. And I believe that that's a noble thing. But I'm not sure that we have a catalyst to force these types of changes that's coming down the pike, other than one, we go off the cliff with bankruptcy as a nation, because that's where we're heading, or two, we use Republic Review as a force. And as we hear the force of music coming up, that means I'm up to a hard break. So stay tuned, folks, and we will get into the force of Republic Review or going off the edge when we get back. After the word from our sponsors, thank you. Okay, so we are back. This is our final segment for your drive home, and we still have Tim Benn here, and we were just going off the cliff with the nation and or a catalyst of Republic Review. So let me frame this and put this into context, because I do not see anything that's out there as far as on the horizon that is going to force a cultural change to move us back in the direction we need to go, because we're definitely not only going in the wrong direction, but we're going there at neck break speed.
We're incentivizing the herd to move closer to the cliff.
Yes. And so again, putting it into context, Republic Review, because I know it's kind of a new concept, and I know it's probably fascinating, maybe, you think? Anyway.
I think it is an interesting concept. I think it's an important tool. Uh-huh. I think it's constitutional. You know, when I look at government and the right thing to do, and in my frame of mind, how I will make decisions on the city council is that, you know, is it legal? Is it moral? Do the citizens even want it? You know, so you look at that lens, but right now we have so many people in government saying, well, this is a problem we need to solve.
Right. Right.
But it's not. There are limits of government. The government cannot create morality in the home. The government can't create morality in a society. All it can do is try to, and what it's trying to do now is trying to minimize and mitigate the damages that society is doing to itself. Therefore, society continue to go down the wrong road because we have this safety net of government that's going to, you know, come pick me up after my drug addiction. Well, the problem is we've done so much of that now we're incentivizing the problem. And I think that we've got to start following some of the laws that were put in place originally, so that we can actually have the government back in its proper role of facilitating somebody's ability to succeed instead of facilitating someone's ability to have a drug overdose.
Right. So if you look at the government and what they've been doing, they've actually been doing things well outside the boundaries as far as social engineering and manipulating us from the early 1800s, with Christmas as being a huge manipulation, Thanksgiving, and all these secular progressive ideas. But Republic Review, what it will do is it will turn off the spigot. of federal dollars and the printing presses in D.C. from being able to pour these into the states. But and people will look, oh, that's a terrible thing. But actually what it will do, not only will it turn off this debt machine, but it'll release all of these EPA, every federal regulation that's been put on our necks with jackbooted thugs, those will go away. And so we'll actually be able to start harvesting our trees. We'll be able to start mining minerals again. We'll be able to utilize all the resources and the available resources and business entrepreneurial ideas without having government say, no, you can't do that.
Well, and there's a perfect example going on right this instant with Mayor Condon, who had just went to Washington, D.C. to talk about the EPA standards for water quality. They have a standard on specifically PCBs that is a standard that is so high they don't even have technology to measure it. So how do we hit a standard that's immeasurable? We already have some of the cleanest water in the world here. And so there's this one element in this standard that's completely unreasonable. Why is the federal government dictating that to the state when we already have a local department of ecology mm-hmm. that is up to the state? And it's very strict guidelines, some of the strictest in the country.
Right.
And we have the cleanest environment in the country, in Washington. So why is the federal government now dictating to us when, in fact, on the other end of it, the federal government is saying Spokane is a perfect model on how to deal with water treatment and sewage treatment with our CSO tanks, all the investments that we've made, $250 right. million plus dollars
right.
into making sure the river's clean and we have clean drinking water. So on one end, we're a model, but on the other end, we're not good enough.
And they're also telling us that that water is so good that you can go drink it, but don't eat the fish.
Right, right, right. Don't eat the fish. Well, and some of the water quality problems that we have here in Spokane and the standards they're holding us to are actually contaminants that are coming from upstream.
Right.
You know, so how can you be held accountable for something you can't control?
That is true. That is true. However, if we can get these regulations, if we can get this spigot turned off, and then we become self-sustaining and self-sufficient.
Well, yeah, because the spigot, the problem I see with the spigot isn't just the federal borrowing and the debt. It's they're collecting local taxes, federal income tax, in Washington State,
right?
So that they can have giant bureaucracy in D.C. to dictate to citizens in Washington State. So we're paying for our own problems too.
Yes.
When we already have good regulations in Washington, we already know how to you know, do the things that we need to do down the street and in the neighborhood. But right. D.C., the richest area in the country, because they keep taking all of our money, has decided they know better than we do. And I think that's wrong. And if the federal government has already taken over a lot of these duties, how on a city council can you govern a city and your executive branch if its hands are tied by federal regulation that contradicts local regulation and common sense?
But the point that I'm hoping you're getting is that the majority of all those regulations that are tying your hands are unconstitutional and illegal.
Well, because it's outside the enumerated powers of the Correct. Constitution. And if it doesn't have to do with constitutional authority of the federal government, well, then we need to look at our state legislators and how we should handle the problem,
right.
not bureaucrats in D.C.
Right, because the beautiful thing about the Washington State Constitution is it says that the U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So if it's not within the Constitution and we're getting federal tyranny and bureaucracies that are basically dictating despotism to us, then we should, as a state, step up and say, hey, hold it. This Constitution only gives you these powers, not all of these other powers. That's the supreme law of the land. And the rest of this stuff is just bogus.
Well, they've taken our money, and now they've decided that we have to follow certain things to make sure that we can get that money back to use it to pave our roads. And now they're saying, oh, no, you have to, you know, bike lanes and road diets. And we don't get to make a local decision on what's best for the community or the area that needs the road replaced. We have to follow with all these strings attached. So, and of course, those are match grants a lot of times. And so, yeah, the federal overreach really hinders what local agencies, their goals, their missions are hindered because these federal dollars that are taken out of our state, out of our city, and then laundered, they took their cut. Now they're handing it back with a bunch of strings attached. So I think that we've got to start saying, this is how we want to govern our city. These are the elements in which the taxpayers want.
Right.
This is what they want out of the city. This is what's constitutional. And we need our state legislators and our Congress to do their job, which they don't seem to be doing very often. We had just had the longest legislative session in state history, and they still didn't fix the Hearst decision or pass a capital budget. So they're not doing their job in Washington State, and at the federal level, they're not getting their job done either in solving the immigration issue and solving the taxation, over-taxation issue. So we're going to see what happens here soon. But I think the public, partly because of shows like yours, are becoming educated in how government should operate, because we're all left scratching our heads on, why is this happening? Well, it's because some are overstepping their roles, and in some places, the actual true purpose of having government isn't being done. Well, so we've got to correct that, which is why I'm running for office.
Right, and, absolutely.
So I hope people listening will go to my website, votetimben.com, help out. We've only got just a short time left. Ballots will be dropping soon. We got to encourage our family, friends, and neighbors to vote.
I've been telling the voters and I've been telling the listeners on this show that this is a very critical election. We need to stop the machinations that are being driven by these progressives in office so that we can actually take back this city and make the city productive and self-sufficient and not dependent on D.C. or Olympia. The point of this whole show is, one, to educate, and two, to be significant driver of change within this city and as a beacon for the rest of this nation. And so I'm hoping that people will get the word out, because if you look at the outcome of the primary, there was so low in voter outcome that all we need to do is get people that, one, want to see substantial and reasonable change that is for the better, for more productivity, more
and
wealth.
Some of it might just be, instead of change, how about correction?
Correction, there you go.
So the idea of Republic Review, it's really about correction. It's about getting back in line with common sense. And we currently have a city council that doesn't seem to have enough of that. And right. So I hope people encourage everyone to turn out and vote. Which is that low voter turnout. It's sad that we have that many citizens that don't even know who's in offices or who they should put in office.
Correct. But folks, it's Tim Benn. And if you actually take the time to fill out your card and your ballot and get it in, it will make a difference. Thank you for your time, Tim.
All right,
and we'll
you.
Be back next week, folks. Stay tuned for another show of Reclaiming the Republic next week. Thank you again. God bless.